Welcome to AncestorsBackThen.com. During this series, we'll learn how our ancestors lived in the 20th century, early to mid-1900s. Their stories are fascinating. I think you'll enjoy it. Let's get started.
Ms. Shirley, it's so nice to have you back again. We appreciate you.
It is a pleasure, as well as a relearning experience, to go back into my childhood days of the many, many families that helped the community children to grow up and to be responsible and to be respectful. It's a pleasure.
Oh, well, thank you. Here's what I'd like to ask you this time, Ms. Shirley, because, you know, we've covered all the electricity, plumbing, and outhouses, which is everybody's favorite. But what I'd like to ask you this time, what was your family's greatest fear, your parents and your grandparents, as you recall, growing up?
My grandparents, one of their greatest fears was that blacks would not get a chance to grow up and to really express themselves because of the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan. Mm-hmm. And the Ku Klux Klan was a big, big, big pain in the black folks' side. Mm-hmm. And our grandparents feared that, and they feared us being uneducated and not being able to have a chance to better, you know, our lives coming up. Our grandparents feared that if they spoke out and if they saw something, they were afraid to tell it or they were afraid to express themselves. And they did not have that much backing as we do today. You had police, but most of the police force down south was white. So you were fearful of what you said and how you said it. Mm-hmm. And you were fearful of that repercussion coming back on your children and your grands and your great grands. So the fear of speaking out, the fear of us not being educated enough to reach a higher level of living and a higher level of life.
So many of us were falsely accused back then, so I can understand that.
Right.
Were your ancestors, as you recall, allowed to vote?
No, not really, until everything began to change and black folks began to vote. Well, we did not vote in the front of the building. It was around the back or on the side, but we did vote. Our votes sometimes were counted and not counted. But
right.
We did get the chance to vote and to express ourselves. The more that blacks came out with higher educational volumes for us to speak and to see and to be able to be an American citizen, we took advantage of that, as such as a higher education, such as going to college and becoming doctors and lawyers and physicians and pharmaceutical people. So we had a chance to break out of that fear, but we didn't have enough people to back us up as far as the law. But we did have lawyers and people that were able to stand up for us and with us.
And as far as the people who did stand up for us, as far as activists, they usually wind up taking them out, which is sad. Because I remember a story a friend of mine, Dr. Lyons, told me about a couple on Christmas Eve. Just because they were registering our people to vote, somebody put a bomb under their bed at Christmas Eve, and they died. So, yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying.
Fear was a fear, but at that time, blacks really pulled together because they had to look out for one another. They had to depend on one another. We had to depend on the pastors and the ministers of the church, because this is where we receive our strength from God. Our faith kept us, many of us alive, many of our parents and our grandparents and our great-grandparents. So fear was fought with prayer. Fear was fought with prayer and faith in God.
Fear was fought with prayer. And that's all we had.
Yes, that's all we had. That's all we had.
What about health insurance and life insurance and things like that? How did we take care of our health back then?
We had life insurance. It was your little Gulf Life and American General. We had those little nickel and dime policies, which would end up being maybe about $300, $400, $500 in case, you know, you had death in the family. You would have that, you know, to bury your loved one. Our health consists of our homegrown vegetables and our midwives taking care of us. And we had a very good doctor. Dr. O'Marion B. O'Kelly was very favorable toward the blacks, because he would make sure you had your polio shots and you had your shots that would take care of us. But mainly the homegrown was something, your vegetables and the medicine that grandma would make, or great grandma would make. But it always
home remedies.
Home remedies.
Now the doctor you talked about, was he a white physician?
Yes, he was.
Okay.
White physician, and these were for years. And in fact, he delivered a lot of black babies. Dr. Marion B. O'Kelly. He was very favorable, very humanistic toward the blacks, and he took care of us and made sure that we did get our shots in order for us to go back to school, you know, in the fall as well as in the summer, our polio shots and different things like that.
What a blessing to have had him in the neighborhood.
Yes, but most of the home remedies, as our teas and things like that, came from grandma and great grandma. They would make those things to make us feel better.
Right, and eating healthy too, as you mentioned earlier.
Eating, you had your three meals a day. You may not have liked what they fixed, but you ate. You may not have liked the grits and the ham hocks, but you ate it.
Did everyone eat dinner at the same time every day?
Everybody ate dinner at the same time, said grace, and we sat to the table as a family. We sat there and we discussed things, that whatever happened, if somebody played the Boleta, which was like the Maryland Lottery and the Florida Lottery, mm-hmm. they played the Boleta, and if somebody hit, anybody in the group hit, they would come by and give each family maybe $1, $1.50, and $1.50 would go a mighty long ways.
Always sharing,
always giving, always praying, and always had each other's back covered. And it was no backstabbing or turning against one another, because that's all we had was one another, the church, our ministers, and our base.
We need to return to that today.
Yes.
At the dinner table, this may sound simple, but who was served first at the dinner table back then?
Back in the day, who was served first would be the dad at the head, the head of the house. He would sit at the table, and the mom or the grandma would serve him first. And if grandpa was living, it would be grandpa. It would be the two men that was at the head of the table, and then it would be grandma. And then it was us, the children, that would be served. But we would wait, because they taught us to wait and be patient, and to honor your father and your mother, that our days will be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, when we honor. That's what we did. We honor and we bow our heads. And when they talk, we didn't talk. We didn't sniggle at the table. We didn't get up with food or plates leaving the table, going here to eat. And everybody sat and we ate. And when we finished eating, everybody took their plate from the table into the kitchen.
Now, because I was wondering why the men were fed first, because today we look out, the first thing we do is feed the kids. But as you said, it was done to honor the elderly people in the house, your elders.
Right. And they were the ones that was working and putting the food on the table. And they made sure that the table was full of food so that everybody would be able to have seconds. So in order for them to get up 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and hit those fields, the watermelon field, the collard greens field, the peas field, they would work from sun up to sundown and still be able to come in and wash up and sit down and have grace and say grace. And that was a time you sat there and you kept quiet and you listened to Daddy and Granddaddy give thanks to the Lord for whatever he had blessed us with to eat and to remain healthy.
Right. And you were obedient at that table.
You had to be obedient or get knocked unconscious.
How were babies delivered, Miss Shirley?
Most babies were delivered. If Dr. O'Kelly didn't deliver the babies, we had midwives that would, you know, deliver babies. Mrs. Nyblack was one of the best midwives there in Florida. And she delivered a lot of babies. And at that particular time, I think it was like $4. I think it was $4 to deliver and $2 to come to the house. So she had something like that. And she had all of the equipment. But the only thing is, like I said, she was getting older. And when you got into labor, you wanted to make sure Miss Nyblack was sitting there in the house, not waiting until she come cross town. Because by that time she got there, maybe the baby was halfway coming or what. But Miss Nyblack was one of the best midwives there in Leesburg, Florida. Yes.
And that's what they did. They were that was their solely their job, just midwives, to deliver babies.
Deliver babies and make sure they were clean up, make sure they got the mom breast was all clean up, because if you didn't breastfeed them, you had to bottle, you know, to feed the babies. But the midwives made sure everything was directly clean so that when that baby come here, they would be, you know, healthy. If it was born breech, they would turn that baby around so that it could come head first instead of feet first. Yes.
Was that because we couldn't afford to go to the hospital or we weren't allowed?
We were allowed to go to the hospital, but it was never up front. You had rooms for blacks to have your babies, but it was never the push kind where the white folks or the Mexicans would go. But the blacks had, we did have black nurses, people that worked in the hospital that kept those rooms and things spick and span clean.
But it was segregated.
And it was, yes, it was segregated, yes, uh-huh. You had a separate entrance and a separate room to have your babies. It was never up front in the big operating room or never up front where you would have, you know, your attention taken care of after you, you know, had your baby. It was rooms in the back and they were kept clean because we had a lot of nurses and things, black nurses that would go in and keep everything clean up. And we had a lot of men that would keep the outside as well as the inside clean.
What was life like in school for your parents, your grandparents, or yourself back then?
Life in school was very good because we had some of the strongest black teachers. We had them where we were able to sit up straight. There was no slouching over in your seat. It was good morning, good afternoon, and you would stand and you would say the flag and you would participate in any kind of school activity.
You did the Pledge of Allegiance? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Okay. Yes, mm-hmm. We did the Pledge of Allegiance and we did good morning to the teacher. Good morning. How are you? That type of thing, you know, and we would discuss different things that would come up for the Christmas holidays or either we call it Halloween or whatever holiday came up. We were invited for the teacher to call upon us and we would tell how we felt about different things and how we felt about slavery and how we felt about, yes. And how we felt about being called the N-word, the nigger, how we felt about that and how we felt about being called black because you were black in color, not because you were black in race. They discussed things like that and they let us know that we're in the dark. It's always a light somewhere at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. We had very good teachers that they were old and
wise.
And wise and very, very, very direct to the point. Blunt.
They didn't try to sugarcoat it for you because they knew what was ahead for you.
That's right. And they believe in time. And there's a thing about don't come on CP time. No, when you went to school, you were on time. Then you went to church, you were on time. There was no such thing back there, color people time. No. You were in school on time. You were dismissed on time. And when your parents came in to see the teacher, you always came with your parents and you went back home with your parents. There was no parents coming and you running and ripping and not coming to PTA meet. No, ma'am. Mm-hmm. No, ma'am. And half the time, if you did not come to PTA meet, the teachers would come to your house with all of your papers, whether they were good papers, good grades, or bad grades.
Okay, they delivered. The report card, so to speak.
Yes.
How many grades were in the same room, or was everyone in the same room?
No, everyone was not in the same room. Sometimes you would have the third and the fourth grade in the same room. You would have fifth and sixth, but as the schools became larger and they became overpopulated, the counties began to widen out and began to build larger schools so that sixth grade could be by themselves, seventh grade could go on to the middle class, go on to another school. But as far as learning, there was no such thing as unable to learn. There was no such thing as talking in class or whatever, or disrespecting a teacher. No, ma'am.
Like they do today.
No, you disrespect a teacher back then. It was one day if you could get up and walk home. Because they did not, and punishment, they did not play.
They didn't tolerate it.
They did and would not tolerate. And go home with you and tell your parents the same thing. So respect was one of the main ingredients in school and in home. And if you were disrespectful, you best better leave. Your parents would tell you,
You're going to pay for it when you get home.
I'm going to get the butter from the
dough. Miss Shirley, you have enlightened us again. I appreciate it. We can do this whenever you want, whenever you come up with some more information from the past.
Now it's time for Miss Shirley's Tips.
I, I would like for the young people to know that blacks did own their own business, from beauty shops until the little barbecue places. They worked hard at the things that they made a living out of. And they did everything that they possibly could to have things for us children. Like they would have fairs and they would have circuses. And when we were little, there was one man that would come from New Orleans. He was Silas Green from New Orleans. And everybody would come to town to see Silas Green because it was one of the biggest shows and the biggest fairs. And it was good for us to see other people from other states right here in America sometime because, you know, you didn't leave home, that you didn't travel unless it was during the holidays or during the summer. Yeah, but when entertainment came, it was black entertainment and it was good, you know, entertainment. Yes.
Wonderful.
Anybody my age and older, and I think they should know that Silas Green from New Orleans had one of the best, we would call it road shows. It was always on the road going from south to south to south, you know, and entertainment.
Wow. And you took care of each other. That's wonderful. That is wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And we did get our hair straightened. It was no permanent. We had the hot comb.
Yes.
Royal Crown hair grease at my night, yes. And sometimes even lard.
Are you kidding? Okay, now that I never heard.
Yeah, lard. That you would just fry your chicken with instead of Crisco.
We had
lard. And then you would wash your hair and you would grease your hair, scalp down with that lard, and you would... When your parents got through it, it looked like you did have a perm.
Did everybody get a press and curl, or did some women just go natural?
Some women, it all depends on the texture of your hair. If you had, like they say, good hair, you just washed it and greased it and brushed it, and it would curl up. But if us, with the cuckabugs, like they used to call our hair cuckabugs, we had to have the hot comb to get them BBs out the back of your neck.
I love it. Oh, Miss Shirley, I love you so much, and I love all the information that you always share. I appreciate it so much, and I'm sure the young people will appreciate it. I'm glad you gave them that tip, letting them know that black people own their own businesses, because that's where we need to be again
own
right
business,
now.
Yes, own businesses, own homes, and like I said, they own enough to make them walk around with their head up, to for them to be deacons on the church and deaconess. And they own businesses enough where they could, you know, go downtown and talk with the man if they, you know, in order to help blacks get credit. And that's something that blacks fought so hard to get, was credit.
Yes.
And once you got that credit, you had to keep it to show the white man that I am dependable, that I'm trustworthy, that I can pay my bill. I don't have to wait till you come and take anything out of my house because I'm going to work.
Right. So you won't come repossess my items. That's right.
Right.
That's right.
That's right. That's true. And then again, too, if the blacks owe the white man anything, he better try to come during the daytime to get it, because if he come there at night, he'll never find his way back.
Oh, mama.
They would shoot the air because they would shoot all up in the air, turn the dogs loose. Yes. Therefore, they worked hard to keep what they had.
Yeah, I also heard that some of our people lost their land, too, because they owed the white people money and they couldn't pay on time. So they would just repossess the land.
Yes, for a few dollars. Yes, for a few dollars. They took their property. And that's why, you know, at dinner time, mom and grandma would always, you know, feed dad first, because they were out there trying to keep what they had worked hard for and what was given to them. And they wanted to keep it to show the white man, you're not going to put me outdoors. You're not going to have me, you know, sleeping like you want me to sleep in the barn, in the backyard someplace. So when we did get property, that's what we fought so hard to keep it and to pay taxes.
Yeah. Dignity. Yes.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Thank you, my dear. Thank you again. I appreciate it. And hopefully we'll talk to you again.
Anytime, honey, anytime, because it's like I said, it's no place like home. I don't care where you go, it's no place like home.
Oh, we're going to end it on that. I love it. No place like home. I like that.
No place like home. Okay.
Thank you, my dear.
Anytime, my love. Anytime.
Thank you for joining us. We'd love to hear your story. Send us an email to bj@ancestorsbackthen.com. That's bj@ancestorsbackthen.com, and we'll be in touch. We'll see you next time.
Don't forget to like us and subscribe.